Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Merry Christmas, everybody, from Pigskin Dispatch, because in this episode of the Football History Headlines for December 25th, we discuss the big gridiron events of Christmas and the people as well as many of Hall of Fame legendary stories on this special edition, the Best of Pigskin Dispatch, Christmas Day Edition.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Merry Christmas, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history. And what a glorious day, not only in the world's history for religious reasons and, you know, the savior of the world coming in, but also in the game of football, which pales in comparison to the real meaning of Christmas, believe me. But there is some entertainment value and some great history in a game of football that we're going to cover for this December 25th, which is full of this rich gridiron greats and events that happen. So sit back and enjoy this Best of the Pigskin Dispatch on this holiday season. And we'll get started off in the year 1894 on December 25th in San Francisco, California. The first sectional college football game was played as the University of Chicago played Stanford University. The game was most likely established between the two coaches who were together at Yale University over a decade earlier. Stanford's coach was the father of football, Walter Camp, who used to coach the University of Chicago's head coach, Amos Alonzo Stagg, as shared by SwanGalleriesWebsite.com. Stagg and the Maroons traveled well and put it to the Cardinal 24-4 in the game. Stay tuned for a December 29th rematch, though, on our December 29th football history headlines. December 25th, 1905, in Wichita, Kansas, an experimental game trying never-before-used rules as Fairmont entertained Washburn College. After the legendary October 9, 1905 conference of President Teddy Roosevelt meeting with a brain trust of college legends such as Walter Camp, Arthur T. Hillebrand, and William Reed, among others, to reform football after 18 deaths occurred as a result of action on the field during the 1905 season. According to the Kansas.com story on the subject, several rule changes, including 10 yards for a first down and legalizing the forward pass, had long been talked about but not acted upon. But until now, with Roosevelt's mandate, these were among the innovations needed to keep the game going by making it safer for players. Allegedly, this Christmas Day game in Wichita was the laboratory to see how these revisions could do on the safety side of things. The details are a bit murky, but per the article, the first forward pass may have occurred in this contest. It's long been thought that Paul Veeder of Yale to Bob Forbes in 1906, or Lewis quarterback Bradbury Robinson's completion of the first legal pass on September 5th, 1906, when he threw 20 yards to Jack Schneider, were the first completions of the pass, but that might not be the case. The Kansas article goes on to say that though the Christmas Day game in Kansas was documented by a December 26, 1905, Wichita Daily Eagle write-up, it didn't really account for who or what team threw the pass at first and may have not made the official record list because, after all, the game was an experimental exhibition. Even so, the fact that it was played with the new rules is a monumental to the gridiron history. Some 45 years later after the game, Bliss Isley, who was one of the Fairmont College players in that game, wrote in a 1956 article for This Week, the National Sunday magazine, Isley wrote that Roosevelt didn't want to wait for the 1906 season, that he wanted to get them tried as soon as possible. The article goes on to say that, as Isley wrote, when no big league teams accepted the challenge, Fairmont team manager and left guard Roy Kirk booked the game with Washburn and wired Roosevelt, telling the president that the game would be played under the experimental rules. As to who tossed the ball forward legally first, Mr. Isley may have the answer to that too, as he said in a description of a play that Davis was running right, avoiding a tackle, and then throwing a two-handed underhand pass to Salter, who had broken right towards the sideline. Salter grabbed it and easily crashed ahead for the first down. In a postscript, on January 12, 1906 in New York, sweeping rule changes were approved, and many were the ones that were used in this Washburn-Fairmont game, and the rest is history. December 25, 1971, the Miami Dolphins and the Kansas City Chiefs played in a very memorable game on Christmas Day in the AFC Divisional Contest. It ended up being the longest NFL game ever as it went into two overtime sessions before Miami kicker Garo Yepremian booted a 37-yarder to advance the Dolphins to 27-24 in a thriller. Kansas City's Ed Podolak performed an amazing 350 yards of all-purpose yardage in a losing effort. December 25, 1989, Chris Dolman registered three sacks of the Bengals quarterback, and kicker Rich Carlos nailed five first-half field goals to propel the Minnesota Vikings to a 29-21 victory over Cincinnati to secure the NFC Central Division and shut the door on the Bengals' playoff chances. December 25, 1993, the final weekend of the season, saw the Houston Oilers matched up against the San Francisco 49ers. These two offenses were the top scoring units in the league on the season, but it was the defenses that stood up tall that day as the Oilers escaped with a 10-7 victory. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines, and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com, and you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
This is Jeremy McFarland from the Footballist Family Podcast, and I want to encourage you, if you get a chance, to come over to the Footballist Family Podcast, where we look at what makes football special and family to each person. We talk about each team, and we talk about the stories behind why fans love those teams. We encourage you to come and join us in our discussion. Thank you.
December 25th, 2004, Kansas City return specialist Dante Hall set the table with a 49-yard kickoff return so that kicker Lawrence Tynes could knock through the game-winning field goal with 20 seconds left to lift the Chiefs to a 31-30 victory over the Raiders. As a side note, Tynes had missed two earlier kicks in the game. December 25th, 2002, Las Vegas, Nevada. History was made at the Las Vegas Bowl, game between New Mexico and UCLA. It was in this game that Katie Haneda of the Lobos became the first woman to play in a Division I-A bowl game, kicking an extra point attempt that was blocked. Ms. Haneda, next season on August 30th, 2003, became the first young lady to score at the Division I-A level. December 25th, 2006, the New York Jets win 13-10 over the Miami Dolphins in a torrential rainstorm. Fourth quarter touchdowns by both teams during a break in the weather provided most of the scoring, and a 30-yard field goal by kicker Mike Nugent with 10 ticks of the clock remaining sealed the win for the Jets, as told by an article by the Pro Football Hall of Fame website. December 25th, 2010, according to the Pro Football HOF website, Arizona Cardinals defensive playmakers Dominic Rogers-Cromartie and Greg Toler each had a pick six to lead the Cards to a 27-26 victory over those Dallas Cowboys. December 25th, 2011, Green Bay's Aaron Rodgers tosses five touchdown passes to prevent the Chicago Bears from earning a wild card spot in the playoffs in a Packers 35-21 victory per the Pro Football HOF story. December 25th, 2016, the AFC North game that would determine the winner of the division, as the Baltimore Ravens looked pretty good as they held a lead late in the fourth quarter over the Pittsburgh Steelers. But according to an archived Pro Football HOF story, the Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown were not done yet, as with seconds left, Brown caught a pass at the Ravens' one, and it looked like he'd be short of the goal line as safety Eric Weddle and linebacker C.J. Mosley were in contact with the receiver almost immediately. Somehow, number 84 for the Steelers ducked and stretched to get the ball briefly across the stripe for the score to lift Pittsburgh to a 31-27 victory. We know that December 25th is dedicated to probably the biggest birth in human history, but we also have some lesser Football Hall of Fame birthdays that we talk about on this football podcast, and the first took place on December 25th, 1941, in Munster, Texas. Texas Tech's wide receiver David Parks was born. The National Football Foundation states that Parks was the first Red Raiders to reach the acclaim of the Associated Press All-America team, as he rewrote almost every Texas Tech receiving record in his collegiate career. Some of these items were a 98-yard pass play, 1,090 career receiving yards, and 80 career receptions. The College Football Hall of Fame welcomed David Parks into their membership in 2008. December 25th, 1943, in Houston, Texas, Howard Twilley, the great wide receiver from the University of Tulsa, celebrated his birth. FootballFoundation.org tells us how Twilley led the nation in 1964 and 1965 in receiving yardage, touchdowns, and the amount of catches he made. These numbers earned him All-America status for both seasons, as well as being voted as a runner-up in the Heisman voting in 1965. The NFF voters selected Howard Twilley to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1992. December 25, 1945, Foley, Alabama. The Crimson Tide's legendary quarterback Ken Stabler was born. Ken performed one of the most remarkable and memorable plays in Alabama football history when he did his famous run-in-the-mud play against Auburn in the 1967 Iron Bowl. The Snake, as he was called, was drafted by the Oakland Raiders in the second round of the 1968 NFL Draft, and he played 15 seasons in the league. Besides the Raiders, Ken spent time with the New Orleans Saints and the Houston Oilers rosters, too. He is best known as the leader of the Silver and Black offenses, though, of the 1970s, including Super Bowl XI, where he and the Raiders took apart the Minnesota Vikings 32-14 on a timely passing by Stabler, who went 12 of 19 on a day with 180 yards to keep the Purple People Eaters defense on their heels. For his career, Stabler had a 661 winning percentage as a starter, throwing 194 touchdown passes for well over 27,000 career yards, and he even led his team to five straight conference championship games. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Ken Stabler in 2016. December 25th, 1946, Stowe, Ohio. Larry Zonka, the tough running back from Syracuse, was born. According to the NFF website, Zonka claimed he never lifted traditional gym weights to get in shape, but he garnered his physical fitness by working on the family farm in Stowe. Zonk was in top 20 of the nation's leading rushers in three straight seasons from 1965 through the 1967, and in 67 he earned the unanimous All-America status. In fact, Larry Zonka broke many orange records by great rushers like Jim Brown, Ernie Davis, Floyd Little, and Jim Nance. Larry pulverized defensive lines, registering 14 collegiate 100-yard games in his career with a 4.9 average carry. The College Football Hall of Fame welcomed hard-nosed runner Larry Zonka into their membership in 1989. In 11 NFL seasons, he had over 8,000 yards rushing and a 4.3-yard average per carry. Larry Zonka ran his way into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1987. After school, Larry was the first pick in the 1968 NFL draft by the Miami Dolphins. He played in five Pro Bowls and was an MVP of Super Bowl VIII. He played a total of 12 seasons of professional football with the Miami Dolphins, the New York Giants in the NFL, and in 1975 with a stint with the WFL. We hope everybody has a great holiday season and that you join us tomorrow for the December 26th football history headlines when we discuss the Giants falling 3 weeks after winning a title to an independent team, the results of three NFL championship games that were played on this day, and a four-time Super Bowl winning coach hangs it up the whistle. It's all in your tomorrow Pigskin Dispatch football history headlines. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
It was just another ordinary day in the offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items, thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delft discovered the splendiferous magic of Row One sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can too by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's ROW number one today for access to the full Row One catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Back today for 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans, this is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.